Welcome to another hour of Advanced Living Radio. This is Kenneth Lesser, thrilled and delighted to be your host again today. And you know here at Advanced Living Radio, we've made a commitment to find ways to support your life day in and day out with the things that are going to bring you to higher levels of wellness, higher levels of well-being. And that's inspired by a prayer daily. Heavenly Father, show me the best ways to have the most fun, inspiring the largest number of people to easily, naturally, joyously experience vibrantly, exquisitely, healthy, wealthy, passionate living in the shortest amount of time with the least intrusion into their lives so we can all get our needs met and celebrate a global loving community that works for everyone. Well, that's a whole bunch of words, and yes, it's important. Today, our guest basically put all that prayer into a few simple words. Let's learn to love each other. Ah, talk about a sweet summary and the brilliance of divine feminine beauty. Today, we are just in for such a treat. And to let you know, our show, Advanced Living Radio, is brought to you by AdvancedLiving.com. I invite you, when you get a minute, to visit there. See a tiny plug-in item called the Comfort Technology used by Jack Canfield, Reverend Michael Beckwith, Dr. Eva Selhove of Harvard. You plug it in, creates an energy like the Dalai Lama shows up and meditates in your room, and your life gets better. Well, today, oh boy, we have an amazing guest, Daphne Rose Kingma. And this woman for 25-plus years has been involved in helping people to literally find ways to love each other. And she is the author, the latest book, and this is the reason she's on the show today, is to talk about, guess what, 10 things to do when your life falls apart. Oh, yes. And, of course, it's not just to keep you busy while your life crumbles around you. It's to help you rebuild it, you know. That's the main thing here, folks. And this woman has been involved with this stuff for years and years. To show you the caliber and the quality, she's been a guest on Oprah 6 times, numerous TV shows. The people all over the world call her for consulting. And when she's not over visiting in France like she is today, taking a bit of a sabbatical, she's in Santa Barbara, a beautiful area. So get ready. We're going to just tune in and find out some wonderful things about how to improve our lives. Welcome aboard, Daphne.
Oh, Kenneth, thank you so much. It's just a joy to be with you. You've already got me laughing. It's just wonderful. It's a great spirit in which to undertake our conversation about living through difficult times, I think. Laughter is always great medicine, as is, of course, love, and I'm just so happy to be with you.
Well, thank you. That's mutual. And I wanted to check in with you because you've written a number of other books before that'd be interesting, and, of course, we invite people to go to DaphneKingma.com, DaphneKingma.com.
KingMA.
MA. Oh,
both,
boy.
Both of my names are a little challenging to spell, so I appreciate that you spelled them out. KingMA is
M-A,
the last
good.
Name.
Okay, yes. And then they can see some of the books. Now, help me to know what got you to write this book, as if it isn't a bit obvious since we're going through a lot of stuff now.
Well, as you mentioned, Kenneth, of course, I've written so many books about love and relationships. I think it's about a dozen by now. And, you know, like everyone else, I'm going through a lot of changes as the world changes. And in the midst of this, a very dear friend of mine came to visit me from Europe, and his life was indeed falling apart, as he used that phrase. His wife had left. He'd lost his job. He had to move twice in the last 6 months. He felt like he'd gotten completely settled in a place where he could unwind and take care of himself, and then found out just a few months later that he had to move again. And the capper was that he was diagnosed with a progressive illness. And when that news came, he just felt so at a loss that he asked if he could come and visit and stay with me a little bit in Santa Barbara, beautiful Santa Barbara, where I live. And so, of course, I said yes, and we spent some time together. And as he was getting ready to go back, he said to me, you know, I am just, you know, wondering, Daphne, can you tell me the 10 things I need to do to get through all this? And I remember we were hiking at the time, and I thought, oh, my goodness, this sounds like somebody's asking me to write a book. It just had that ring, and I realized when he said that, you know, he was speaking for so many people who are going through difficult times, and that his request was really, can you give me some guidelines so that as I'm going through this, you know, there's something to hang on to, there's something to comfort myself with, there's a way to look at all this that will, you know, allow me to feel hopeful as I go through it. And so that really was the inspiration.
Wow. Boy, talk about perfect for both of you, and now for all of us. Now, I noticed in your book, folks, when you go and order this and get this book, of course, because there's 10 things, guess how many chapters there are? Yeah, there's 10 of them. Okay. Someone's got their thinking cap on. And you run the gamut of emotional and practical and spiritual solutions. Would you go into that a little bit, why that is?
Well, yes. It's as the subtitle says, an emotional and spiritual handbook, and I've addressed things on both of those levels because, of course, we are emotional beings, and when tough things happen to us, we get into very intense and very upsetting feelings. We're emotionally wrought up and sometimes feel almost destroyed emotionally. We don't know how to cope. And it's a spiritual handbook also because we are also spiritual beings. And as we go through these trying challenges, it's really an opportunity to call on the deeper level of ourselves and to remember that we are more than just, you know, people going through the tough stuff of life. There's an eternal dimension to us. And so I'm really responding on the emotional, practical, and spiritual level. Practical, too, of course, because when you're going through tough stuff, you do need to address it in the real world. You do need to, you know, make some decisions and take some action. So I think those three levels really encompass who we are, and I wanted to give encouragement in all those realms.
Wow, okay. And so with that in mind, as we have these three realms, I'm wondering if we could, some real meat of the matter, could you share what is your most important practical solution, emotional solution, spiritual solution? So we can start writing notes, folks.
I don't know that I want to be the one to say which is the most, because I think that will really be revealed to the reader, which is the most for them.
Okay.
But some of the emotional ones are, you know, to allow yourself to grieve. I talk about that as crying your heart out, to allow yourself to have your feelings about what you're going through, because so many people don't. It's like, okay, I'm going to grit my way through this, or I'm going to get control, as opposed to saying, wow, this is a deeply emotionally upsetting experience, and grief is the natural healing process for that. So that's one of the emotional things. One of the practical things is to do something different. You know, we get so stuck in the situations that we're in, and we always look backward. You know, it's like, well, how did I do it before? What do I usually do? As opposed to saying, hey, this is a completely new circumstance, and it might be asking me to do something wild and crazy and completely unthought of before that would, you know, drop me off in a brand new landscape where life could begin again in a different way. So that's we can talk about some of the other ones too, but that's certainly one of the practical ones that I like. And people don't often think of that as practical, because it's like, well, that's pretty wild. But it is very practical to take a different action when you're in a stuck place, because as we've often heard, doing the same thing over just brings the same results. So that's a practical one. And of course, my answer, and I believe the answer for everything, is love. And so that's one of the spiritual answers, that when we're in times of crisis, we perhaps more than any other need to connect with and call on our own capacity to love, because that brings us into the presence of what's really important and really deeply healing and transforming in life.
Wow. Yeah, that is the essence of it. I know Zig Ziglar was a fellow that often said, and I think others have repeated it, if you want to feel better about your situation, just go help someone else.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
That, you know, he didn't say go love them, but really, because sometimes we don't like to use the L word as though it was a curse of some sort. I love you, but it's...
Yes, care, of course, is love. It's loving kindness. It's attention. You know, whenever we give positive, nurturing, helpful, informative, supportive, all those are kinds of words, but all of these actions really are constituents of our capacity to love. And so whenever we offer them, we're creating a transformative experience for people and situations.
Mm, wow, that's so good. And I don't know if there would be a few things that you consider essential for helping to get through a crisis.
Well, these 10 things. I mean, I think that, you know, to put a kind of umbrella structure around it, I think one of the things we were just saying a few minutes ago is realize that you're a whole being going through your crisis. You are an emotional being. You are a human being in the world, in material, practical circumstances, and you're also a spiritual being. So I think that's the first general guideline. And then working through the specifics of these 10 things, and as I say in the introduction to this book, you know, this isn't a book for sissies. It isn't like, oh, well, you know, here's a cheery little chapter to read to yourself before you go to sleep and the roof falls in. It's like, this is really a workbook on how to get through things. And it's like an opportunity for people to take stock of themselves, to take stock, for example, of, you know, are you letting yourself have the emotional response that's needed? There's a very significant chapter about facing your defaults, which is looking at your, you know, kind of adapted but not necessarily very effective ways of handling situations. And sometimes when we're in a crisis, we don't stop to say, you know, hey, I better check myself out. You know, is there something I need to learn about myself that I haven't been paying attention to, and it would really help me get through this better. So that's another one, too. And
sure.
Many people have told me that that chapter about looking at your defaults has been so life-changing for them. I mean, I've gotten so much mail about that chapter in particular, because we're all in a rut, you know. We're all kind of doing everything we've always been doing, and having a chance and taking the opportunity to reevaluate is a very powerful thing to do.
Right. Now, looking at your defaults is not the same as someone saying, I want to talk to you about defaults you have.
Right. And let's clarify that word, because for our multitude of listeners, it's kind of a confusing word because it has the word faults in it. It's not about beating yourself up. You know, okay, let's find out all the things that are wrong about you and nail them up on the wall.
Yeah, my friends quickly tell me that if I ask them.
We don't want to hear that. We don't need to hear that. I think we're all kind of hard enough on ourselves as it is.
Oh, which, bless you. That's so accurate.
Know, there's a wonderful book I wrote. I'll just mention it here, a book called Loving Yourself, which is really about growing out of that kind of, you know, self-blaming, self-flagellating response. But defaults are very different. Defaults are like, you know, the default typeface on your computer. If you don't consciously stop to set it in a certain way, it will give you the default typeface. And what that means, or the default printer, what that means is that something is already there to behave in a certain way, and unless you pause and say, no, I want a different typeface for this project, you get the same old thing. And so our defaults are our habitual behaviors, the way we just kind of habitually respond to things. And they're often not very effective. You know, it's like the person who just says, well, I'm scared and upset, so I think I'll get drunk, or I'm scared and upset, so I'll run to the refrigerator, or, you know, I'm scared and upset, so I'll, you know, work 90 hours a week because I don't know how to deal with my wife and family, whatever it is. But these are ways that we learned to respond to challenges in life, and we learned them very, very early on. We learned them in childhood, and they're really very... they're very poignant because they're very woven in with our childhood stories and painful things that happened to us when we were kids. And so we figured out a way to respond. But they're not always very useful in a crisis situation. And so that's why, you know, I'm suggesting strongly that, you know, in a crisis situation, it's very helpful to pause and to look at your default and say, what am I just naturally doing, and is this helpful or is this not helpful? Do I need to do something completely different?
Okay, so that's a little bit like, to get some perspective, stand back and be an observer for a moment and see how you're responding versus just doing it.
Absolutely. Not only be observer, but be a person who now is taking the time and investing the energy in learning something new about yourself, so that instead of your crisis just being, you know, a horrible thing that mucked up the road you were trying to travel in life, it becomes an opportunity to really develop and enlarge yourself. And that's the beauty part of facing your defaults. It's like, wow, I never knew I was, you know, I never knew I always reacted this way. I never knew that I started reacting, you know, this way by going in my room and eating because my parents were always fighting in the living room. And now that scenario is over, and so I can develop a new behavior that will be a lot more effective in the current moment.
Yes, I love it. Backtracking for just a moment, I was noticing at the beginning, of course, at the beginning of each chapter, you put in an amazing quote. And chapter one that has "Cry Your Heart Out," you have Hafiz saying, "He who sits in the house of grief will eventually sit in the garden." And so that
isn't that
up,
gorgeous? I just love that.
Yeah. Yeah, and myself, and I think probably quite a few of us out there, haven't taken the time to, when something has hurt us in a way, to actually grieve it. And when you say cry your heart out, can you overdo it? Can you go in and explain a little bit about what would be some ways that you'd suggest that we could really do some good grieving?
Oh, that's a wonderful question, Kenneth, and so great to have it coming from you, a man, because I think this is very challenging for men in our culture. And so I guess how can we do the grieving that's needed? One thing is to realize that, again, you are an emotional being. When we are hurt, the natural, organic, emotional, and biological response is to grieve, is to cry. Crying is the mechanism whereby we go through this grief process. And, you know, I guess the best and simplest advice I can give to people is if you feel like crying, cry, because there's that so much of a, you know, impulse in so many of us to like jam it, stop it up. I mean, you know, I do emotional healing work, therapy, if you will, with people, and it's just amazing how many times somebody will be sitting with me in my office and they'll start to cry over something devastating that's happening, and then they'll say, oh, I'm sorry, you know, like they're pulling themselves together and trying to shut it off, when in fact that act of crying those tears in themselves, you know, are what brings the healing that's needed. So that's one thing, is to just, you know, allow yourself, give yourself permission when that impulse is there to allow it to, you know, play itself out. The other thing is that, you know, I think so many times people are afraid, you know, well, if I start crying, I'll never stop. You know, it's an endless well of tears and it'll never come to an end. But the truth is, it is a very organic process. And as one man I was working with said, you know, I came home every night after my wife left and I'd look at these old photographs and I just sit there and bawl. And he said, I did that every night for 2.5 months. And then he said, one night I came home and I looked at all the pictures and I realized I was bored. You know, it's like the process was completed. But it is important to make the distinction between healing, organic, emotional healing, grief, and you know, just being an endlessly self-pitying crybaby. And the way you know the difference is real grief brings us to a state of renewal. It's like, okay, I've cried, now I feel better. Okay, I've cried and cried and cried and cried, and now I feel better. But for the person who's just using it as a defense, it doesn't bring that healing consequence. It's just like, you know, self-pitying, self-indulgence, where you don't ever say, wow, I'm seeing the light at the end of the tunnel, or I'm feeling renewed or inspired. So that's the differentiation with it.
Ah, well, that's a good way to know.
Yes.
Hey, if I'm really doing good grieving, then I'll reach a point where it feels complete and I'm no longer caught up in all that pain and suffering anymore.
Exactly. And I think part of the pattern of grief is also that it, you know, it's very intense at the beginning and it does feel overwhelming, but it gradually dissipates. And, you know, even with the greatest loss that people can experience, the death of someone they love, the death of a child, of their spouse, it's like, you know, they're taken apart at the beginning in the first days, and then gradually, and I underline gradually, you know, the frequency of the grieving, you know, diminishes. It's like I don't have to cry every day. It's like maybe once a week, maybe once a month, maybe, you know, months go by and then all of a sudden I'm struck by something and there I am in the puddle again. But it really, you know, as we lovingly allow our grief, it shows us that it is a very organic process that will, you know, allow us to move through it.
I love that, to be able to to make that breakthrough, because I know in the midst of pain, sometimes we just feel like it's the deepest pain that could ever be, and we'd cry forever. And then you go, it's okay to have that feeling, and just know that when you really get into it, it'll actually pass.
So that's
huge. I'm just curious. Women seem to be, just as the way they're trained, a little bit more able to connect to emotions. Have you had any hints or things that us fellas can do to help if we're sometimes feeling more anger or not connecting to some of the sadness or tears?
Wonderful question, Kenneth, and I like especially your mentioning of anger, because I think very often when men are actually feeling grief, they go to anger, because anger is a macho emotion. You know, guys can punch holes in the walls and they can beat each other up and they can be strong and mighty and angry and, you know, back the truck out of the driveway, spitting gravel. Those are all sort of acceptable male things, you know, acceptable in quotes, you know, but they're macho male defined behaviors. And so I think the thing to say that I'd like to say to the men, the suffering men who are also suffering, is ask yourself, is it really anger or is it grief? And if you feel that impulse to cry, for crying out loud, you know, go someplace where you can experience that, you know, just drive to a quiet place in nature or, you know, to a loving friend. I think it's often easier for men to cry if they're in the presence of a female friend, because, you know, women are a little more comfortable with this. But the biggest thing is to give yourself permission to just say, it's okay. It doesn't mean I'm any less of a man. In fact, the release that comes from grieving really allows us to then move on to the practical stuff and say, okay, what do I really need to do now? You know, what's required by the situation? You know, how must I take up the work of getting through my circumstances?
Yeah, as you're saying that, Daphne, just kind of thinking in terms of finding some models, because typically the male model is one of this macho and tough, but I'm just seeing, like, on football games now, after the games are over, guys are gathering from opposite teams and they're praying together. There's something.
Oh wow, beautiful.
Yeah, so that instead of this thing about, well, you're a man and you have to, you know, defeat your enemy and show no mercy and all this kind of stuff. That people can get to see this on TV, where these big, tough men who have battled very hard now pause and pray.
That is amazing, Kenneth. I'm really happy to hear that. You know, that's wonderful.
Yeah, well, I hope we can make some progress so that a man can learn that sometimes his tears can be a sign of strength.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I can't help but mention here another book that I wrote, which is called The Men We Never Knew, which is about, you know, how men are emotionally locked into the male role and, you know, torn between what they really feel, you know, deep down, and what they often don't even know they really feel because they've been so jammed into that role, and between, you know, a living discovery of their own emotions and you know, the legitimacy of that. And that book is really written for women to, you know, instruct them on how men often divert their emotions. You know, they express their sorrow as anger, and they express a lot of things as anger, and that, you know, we can be a lot more supportive and visible and available to men coming into their true emotional nature, which is a blessing for everybody, men and women alike.
Oh, yes. Well, geez. Now, and the title of that book again is?
The title of that book is The Men We Never Knew.
Okay.
And, you know, as you mentioned, as we opened our conversation, all of these books are available on my, you know, through my website, and there's a kind of description of all of them there. And I spent so many years of my work, my emotional healing work, working with men, always more men than women. And as a consequence, I just felt really called to write this book that talked to men about themselves and talked to women about the men in their life and, you know, what they're going through all the time. And because I think this opening awareness of men's emotional lives is just going to benefit us all so very much.
Yeah, well, tremendously, because I know some of the situations we're seeing now as the female energy is starting to emerge and gain some strength, there is, at different levels, that grieving process, and for all that time that women have been oppressed, and part of that grieving, natural grieving process, is a phase of anger. And
yes.
And
yes.
There is definitely areas in which it's like, okay, women are kind of thinking, well, it's our time to get even. You've done this to us for so long, and now we get a chance to stand strong and bond together. And you're saying, yeah, stand strong, bond together, and get what you really want, which is love, by learning to be compassionate and understanding of the men.
Exactly, Kenneth. That's exactly what I'm saying. And I think, just as women have felt suppressed in terms of their power, you know, and the legitimate expression of their power and their offerings and culture and society and learning, the same suppression or a similar suppression has been true for men, which is that they have had their emotions suppressed. It's like, okay, you guys go out and fight the wars and put out the fires and jump in the cold water and give us the lifeboats, but we're not going to give you any room to have any feelings about them, about, you know, all the things that you go through and do. And so I think this is really also a time with an opportunity for a male emotional awakening. And, you know, my deep prayer is that can really happen alongside what's happening with women.
Yeah. And Marshall Rosenberg, who did a lot of research in nonviolent communication, made mention of the fact that in his research, a lot of communication patterns were set up to have people subservient to authority. And, of course, for men, that was particularly important in terms of the tribalism and then the battles, so that they would be trained to set aside their feelings and follow instructions, even when they're going, wait a minute, these are other people. And if they thought through it, they'd go, I don't think we want to really be killing each other. And
Right, exactly. So
here we are making that breakthrough where men can connect with their feelings and women can understand and be supportive of that. Oh, boy, talk about a great time to be alive.
Yes, it is. We love that topic, don't we? And, you know, I to bring this back around to the book we're riffing on tonight, I mean, I think one of the great values of crisis in anyone's life is it is an opportunity for awakening. And, you know, these things that we're speaking of about men and women, these changes, these opportunities for greater consciousness are often the gifts of crisis, you know. I mean, I was working with this man recently who, you know, very, very wealthy man who had a multi-million dollar home and lost it to foreclosure. And at the end of the day, he just, you know, he said, I was just so broken and defeated. He said, I went out to the ocean and just sat there at the twilight, you know, weeping. And then he said, after I had a good cry, I got in my car and I went downtown and there was a soup kitchen. And I just said, what can I do? How can I offer myself? How can I be alive? And he just said, he walked up and he said, "Can I help you serve tonight?" And his heart was filled with joy, you know. And it was like this incredible loss set him on a path, you know, which is taking many different forms right now in his life. But I think that's kind of the model for the, okay, yes, have your tears, gentlemen, and know that there is a new path for you, even when it feels like you've lost everything that defined you as a man.
Yeah, wow. Talk about an epiphany of going from that despair to claiming some value, that whether I have a house or not, I can still help someone else.
Exactly, exactly. And one of the things that I talk about in this book, The Ten Things, and I think that story illustrates, is that, you know, when we're in crisis, there is something we need to let go of. We don't always know what it is, you know, but as we go through the process, something is revealed, you know. And in a way, in that story, part of what that gentleman needed to let go of was his pride, his male identity as connected with, you know, this very over-exaggerated house that basically he discovered very soon after he didn't need and was much happier without. It's like trying to keep that all together was just like, it. Trying to keep that all together took him apart. And so, you know, that was an incredible opportunity to let go. And this person, you know, took that opportunity to let it become a transformation.
Mm. Yes. It's so interesting because here the quote in the book on chapter 4, folks, when you get the book, it's about let go. Everything I ever let go of has claw marks on it.
Isn't that great? I think
that's not anything about reluctance or holding on, is it?
I mean, we're laughing about every time I read that. I still laugh about it because it's so true, you know? I mean, it's true on a little level. I remember one year I was throwing a bunch of things away, and I had these nail polish bottles. And for some reason, I was just really fixated on them. I just thought, this is insane, you know? What is my problem that I can't just surrender these and go on with my life? Obviously, I finally did. But I just tell that tale on myself to illustrate that we never know, you know, where we're going to get hung up, and that a crisis is a big-time opportunity to say, what can you jettison? How can you simplify your life? How can you move forward? How can you make it easier, better, smoother? Because, you know, a crisis takes so much of our energy that we really do need to let go of something.
Yeah, yeah. And here we are in that letting go with Colorado. Had a turn to have a very large fire just west of Boulder. And
really?
Yeah, yeah. About 6,000-8,000 acres got burned.
Oh, my goodness.
And,
was that just recently?
Yeah, and a range of almost 170 homes lost. And some of them were homes of firemen who were helping to save other people's homes and lost theirs.
Oh, my goodness.
And of course, the beauty in this is the community is really pulled together, and helping to find places and furnishings and different things, so that people who've been displaced, they know they're not alone and they're being supported.
That's right. And you know, even in the darkest hours, we experience the gifts of the highest of our humanity. I know that can sound very simple-minded, and you know, when you've just lost everything, and yet, you know, I see it over and over again, certainly in the people that I'm working with, but also in, you know, people, I live in an area too where there are many forest fires, and I was at a gathering recently where a man said, you know, we lost our house last year in the fire, and he said, it's just amazing what it did for our family, what it did for our souls. He said, we're now in the process of building a brand new house. We feel like it's an incredible gift. And so these devastating things hold many possibilities for us. And I guess, having said that, you know, I certainly don't want to be glib. We must never be glib in these circumstances, but it's important to also say that the gift that lies at the end of the agony is never clear when you're going through the agony. You do have to go through the process, and it will only be revealed as you have completed the journey.
Ah, okay. So,
yes, that's important news for people. That's why I really wanted to add that. Not like, oh, of course your house burned down, everything's going to be great, don't worry about it, you know. It's important to know that whatever that is for you will only be revealed when you've gone all the way through the process.
Okay. And so that's a very important, I guess to me that leads into some of that important part about the spirituality, because if we just think in terms of what my Mormon friends talk about, our temporal world or the physical things around us, that's one area, but all of this is taking place within a larger framework of a spiritual context, and you emphasize that.
Well, that's true, and, you know, we are so caught up in life as we know it, you know, as the poet Amy Lowell said, getting and spending, you know, it's like, well, how are we going to get that, and how are we going to buy that, and what do we want now, you know, and just the demand. I mean, I think this is so true in our modern life. We are just assaulted from every side, you know. You can't. I have a whole computer that I don't even have the internet on because I don't want to be exposed to any advertising. We are subjected to 3,000 advertisements a day, every average American person. That's how much we're being bombarded. And so we can get so caught up in that we forget there's something much deeper to us. There's the I in the middle of the storm of our being. There's our deep soul. There's our capacity to love, and that really these things are the only things that ultimately matter.
Exactly. There's you probably have heard of this at some point in time. Rudyard Kipling wrote the poem If, which has a lot of things in it, and one of them, in the second verse, it says, if you can dream and not make dreams your master, if you can think and not make thoughts your aim, and then this is the key one for me, if you can meet with triumph and disaster and treat those two imposters just the same.
Oh, wow. That's incredible. Beautiful.
Yeah, and I love the way in your book you're bringing us some tools. Chapter 5, remember who you've always been, helping us to call on some of the resources to find the strength to be able to be, as the Buddhists talk about, non-attached, to be neutral to these things.
Yes, exactly. And calling on remembering who you've always been, which really has to do with, you know, it's kind of the opposite of facing our defaults. It's taking a look at the fact that you totally have survived through your life, that you have some powerful gift that has enabled you to maneuver from childhood to wherever you are now, and that you are a survivor, and that, you know, and just as we often don't know what our defaults are, we often also don't know what these powerful gifts of strength are. And so it's, you know, when you need them, when you're in crisis, it's a great time to check yourself out. Hey, how have I gotten through all these years? Who am I? What do I bring to the table over and over again?
Yeah. Yeah. That's huge. And then, I love the next chapter, because after we're beginning to become aware of some of our strengths and call on those, it's not just to do it once or twice, hoping that'll be enough. But chapter 6 is titled "Persist."
Yes, yes. And I think persistence. We're laughing because it's so hard. I mean, I think persistence is kind of an old-fashioned word that, you know, sort of grandmothery word, you know, like keep hanging in there. But the truth is that we come to victory through repeated action and through a willingness to keep going forward even when it seems so, you know, the outcome seems like it doesn't even exist out there. But when we persist, you know, life is always bringing solutions and the future toward us. And when we persist, that, you know, that moves toward us in a very powerful way. And we don't connect with it unless we keep diligently moving in the direction that it might arrive from.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. One of my favorite expressions in that venue is, "I will until."
Oh, that's wonderful. I love that. That's great.
Yes.
That's great.
Tenacity.
Yes. And I think, you know, I didn't say this as we were opening our conversation, but after my friend asked me this question about the 10 things, what happened was that all of these things were given to me very, very quickly. And I believe that persistence was included because we live in such an age of instant response. I mean, you can press a thing on Google and get, you know, 500,000 responses in half a second, or I don't know what the actual time is, but
yeah, it's
we're
quick.
We're so impatient in this time that we live in because everything is so instantly available to us that to be reminded that when you're going through something very difficult, it is this quality of persistence, of, you know, willing yourself forward until the results reveal themselves, that is so, so very important and correct.
Yes, and a wonderful young woman, Shannon Buckley, tying right into this thing about persistence and kind of looping it to the, to the last chapter of your book, Live in the Light of Spirit. She gave me a hat, and across the top of it, it has the letters P-U-S-H, push, which of course, you know, ties right in with persistence. And then, sneaky of all sneaky things, on the bill of the hat, the words are written, "Pray until something happens."
Oh, wow. That's beautiful. That's beautiful.
Talk about sneaky elegance.
Sneaky elegance. I love that.
Yeah, so it's a push. Yeah, we're pushing our way through this. Well, yeah, and here's one of the ways you want to be pushing. Pray until something happens and keep on.
Yes.
And that was some of, like, Winston Churchill just talked about, never give up.
Yes. That is so wonderful. Wow. Well, you've
what
touched
a book
for a
you've
moment.
Written. This is great.
Thank you. I'm really getting that response from so many readers because I think people are in a lot of dark times now where, you know, our a lot of things are being unraveled in our midst in a way that hasn't happened before to the scale, you know, that we're experiencing it now. And I think that, you know, people of course, do endure and we do get through things, but I think there is such a longing to have a little direction as we're going through the swamp of our difficulties. And that's what I really wanted to offer here. And of course, the final chapter really talks about, as you said, it's called Live in the Light of the Spirit. It's really, you know, saying, hey, the great gift of what you're going through is that it's an opportunity to connect with your higher self, your divinity, your, we have different words for this, your soul, God, you know, people have different ways of speaking of this, but to just be reminded that, you know, this life journey is just a part of our larger journey as, you know, spiritual beings, and we so often don't pause to take the peace of that and to reckon with that and to come to rest with that, that I see it over and over and over again, people saying that the difficult times in their life really brought them to that place of great peace. And so that, I think, is the highest spiritual purpose of the hard times we go through. It's not just to, you know, irritate the living daylights out of us, but to move us to this higher level of our being.
Ah, I love that, because friends like Michael Beckwith, the Agape Church, you know, says, look, we're human, we have the ability to think beyond our situation and come from the place that there is a loving God always there trying to give to us, but if we're so busy caught up in consumerism and other things, we may not get to notice that. But if we run
That's
into
right.
some hard times, oh boy, that can be really what turns us to that place of that connection and actually using it. And I'm suspecting you're kind of helping to share some of that too.
Yes, exactly. And I think in our small selves we're so caught up with the difficulty, but the great news is that this is really an opportunity to move to such a more peaceful and richer level than we ordinarily take time to come to, and that's the amazing gift of it all. So I think there's always, you know, as I was saying before, we don't always see the beauty or the gift when we're going through the anguishing part, but certainly always is a gift lying in wait for us as we go through these things.
Yeah. There's that story of a young boy that is put in a room, and there's a pile of manure, and another boy is put in a room with toys, and is just crying because he doesn't know what toy he wants to play with, and might break it, and the boy in the room with the manure is got a shovel and is digging, and people are going, well, what's going on? And he's going, well, I just know there's a pony in here somewhere.
Right, exactly, exactly.
Yeah. And now, Daphne, people can turn to you not just for your books, but for consultations. They can, is that right? And
yes, I do. I do work with people over the phone frequently. In fact, that's most of my work now. And people can, you know, connect with me through my website, www.daphnekingma, DAPHNEKINGMA, those names. And, you know, I have someone who always responds to everyone who writes to me and can arrange a time to work with me over the phone.
Wow. Well, I feel like my listeners and myself have been just blessed to have you with us and to have a door open to this quality of work and to know that, my gosh, it's not just this book, but there's all kinds of others, that you've just been one little busy beaver there.
I have.
It's been
a wonderful privilege, and it's been just an incredible joy to be with you, Kenneth. I just really enjoyed sharing my work and our consciousness and our hope and inspiration with everyone.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you so much, Daphne. And just keep on prayers are with you, because we need inspiring things that are practical, that have guidelines, not just fluff, because we can always get fluff.
Yeah, exactly.
But here's some steps, and it's well thought out. So you just keep on, and hopefully can have you on a show another time, because with
I
all
look
these,
forward to that.
Oh, great. All this stuff. We could just talk for hours. So
I look forward to that. I think that would be wonderful.
Well, good. Well, Daphne, you enjoy your little respite there in France. And
I will.
And beloved listeners, thank you so much for tuning in. And every week we'll be here doing all that we can to bring value and support for better living, for what I call advanced living. And until we meet again, may I say God bless and goodbye for now. Let go of it.